talented singers, talented pianists, talented demonstration. Now you have me. I'm sorry, I don't have a ton of talent. But I do have a story to finish. And today we're going to look at ticket number 3, and they call her in the book Hero Girl, but she's picked up the name Holly over the years. She's a young African-American girl who is widely recognized by her looped braided pigtails and her pale brown complexion and her pink pajamas. She appears to be between 8 and 10 years old, and she seems very unsure of herself at first, but as the movie progresses, she begins to gain confidence. She is one of those people that throughout the film, you just watch her grow. She defends the innocent when she steps up to explain why our main character pulled the brake to let Billy on board. She shows compassion to Billy by saving him a cup of hot chocolate when he was too shy to go and get his own. She gets to drive the train when the headlamp needs repair. And all through the movie, she's encouraging the other passengers. And, well, she even feels sorry for the poor toys that got abused and left. And her ticket? Well, the conductor punches it with 4 letters, L-E-A-D. And she originally pronounces it lead, like a lead balloon. The conductor does correct her, telling the pronunciation is to be lead, as in leadership. But perhaps there's some irony in the way that she first pronounced the word. Because if you don't know what lead is, let me catch you up a little bit. Lead is a naturally occurring element found in small amounts all around the earth. It and mercury are considered heavy metals. Lead has a low melting point and is very malleable. And, well, it's kind of dense, meaning that it's very heavy. Lead is highly durable and resistant to corrosion. It is also a very poor conductor. However, it does have quite a few applications that we can use from lead. And, well, while it is beneficial in the wrong hands, lead is toxic. And as I read through that list of things that go with lead, guess what? Many of those things fit a wrong time to word that we say lead, because leadership can also occur naturally and is found in small amounts all around the world. But it's also kind of heavy. It can be very burdensome being a leader. We look for leaders that can hold their ground, that are very firm in their foundation. We don't want leaders that are constantly switching their opinions or flip-flopping on things. We want consistent leadership. However, at the same time, we want them to be adaptable to situations. So hold your ground, but make sure you're able to do things the way that I think they should be done. We want our leaders to be durable, right? Nobody wants to follow a leader that is strapped to a bungee cord. They're here today and gone tomorrow. You want a leader that's going to be consistent. And most importantly, we do want our leaders to be applicable, right? We want them to be relatable to us. And unfortunately, in the wrong hands, leadership absolutely, positively can become toxic. Matthew chapter 2, verses 7 through 8 reads, "And Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, 'Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him.'" Maybe I should have nicknamed this sermon series Herod's First Christmas. Maybe it was Herod's Only Christmas. Because Herod was not interested in worshiping this newborn king. Herod was a leader that just wanted to remain in power. When he heard about Jesus, the blessed news, the arrival, well, he just wanted to kill him. That was his first thought. How do I get Christ out of this thing that's going to be called Christmas? But fortunately, Herod is not the only example of Christmas leaders in our story. So today, as we continue to try to find faith in Christmas, we're going to take a look at Christmas leadership. Now, I'm not talking about leadership where you're going to be in charge of a ministry or where you're going to get up and do a solo. Understand the entire purpose of Christmas leadership had but one goal. And that goal was to get people to Jesus. They were there to be the leaders to help others find Jesus. And if you look at each individual character, you indeed can find some very valuable leadership qualities that can help us strengthen our faith as we are trying to get people into a relationship with Christ. We can start with Mary. And right off the bat, we find a very key attribute when it comes to leadership. Mary was available. Luke chapter 1, verse 38 says, "I am the Lord's servant," Mary answered. "May your word to me be fulfilled." Then the angel left her. Now, one of these days, I'm just going to have to do a character study on Mary. Maybe there'll be a Christmas series one year. Because if you begin to look at Mary, she is literally the only one that was with Jesus from the beginning to the end. She was there when he arrived, and she was there when he died. And when God went looking for his chosen mom to raise his son, Mary was the choice. I mean, I'm sure there were other great candidates out there. Maybe we should have had a nomination process or a voting process, but God said, "I don't need that. I am just going to look for the person that I think can do the job best." Here's the thing. We often overlook that God did not force Mary into this role. He said, "You will." He didn't come to her after she was already pregnant. He came to her and said, "You will receive." Mary could have very easily said, you know what? That's a great big honor, God, but your timing's just all wrong for me. I mean, I've already been fitted for my wedding dress, and if I haven't got a child, that's not going to work right. You know, I've got all of these other plans in my life, and you know, it's really nice that you picked me. Thank you for the honor. But no, thank you. I'm sure there's some other girl in Israel that has a bit more time for this. God didn't force her to do it. He gave her the opportunity to do it, and Mary stepped forward. You see, Mary humbly accepted the responsibility to be the mother of Jesus. It was her choice to do this. And I began to think about this. Not that I could ever be the mom of anybody. I'm just not qualified. I'm missing a very important qualification. But I began to think, if God came to me with a mission and said, "Barry, I want you to do," and filled in the blank, would I humbly accept? Or maybe I'd be a little bit more like the innkeeper, who really doesn't exist. And they would come and knock on my door, and I'm like, "I'm terribly sorry, but my life's all a little bit full right now. My rooms are all filled up. I've got way much things going on in my life. I have too many responsibilities for this. So I tell you what, I'm going to hang up my sign. There's no vacancies for you, Jesus. But I tell you what, have I got a deal for you? Out back, there's a cave, and it's where I keep my sheep and my cattle. And I tell you what, I'll give you space there until I can make room in my life for you." Availability. It's kind of important if you're going to be a leader, right? You can't be a leader if you can't show up. You can't be a leader if you're unwilling to be what God asked you to be. So was Mary a leader? Well, if you read through the life of Mary, it screams of leadership all the way through it. But remember, before any of those qualities could be put to use, before they could be part of God's plan, she had to make herself available to God's purpose. And that's a lesson for every single one of us. Before we can accept the mission that God has for us, the first thing we have to say is, "God, here I am." What is it you would have me to do. But Mary's not the only Christmas leader.
Oh, no.
The guy that she's going to marry, he's got a very important skill also. It says that he is faithful. Matthew chapter 1, verses 18 through 19. This is how the birth of Jesus, the Messiah, came about. His mother Mary was pledged to be married to Joseph. But before they came together, she was found to be pregnant through the Holy Spirit. Because Joseph, her husband, was faithful to the law and yet did not want to expose her to the public disgrace, he had in mind to divorce her quietly. Jesus was born of a virgin, but it doesn't mean he did not have a dad while he was here on this planet. And for that man to be his dad, he didn't have to say much. In fact, Joseph didn't say anything. But his actions spoke volumes. What's the word that we see when they decide to describe Joseph? Faithful to the law. Now, you do get, if you're going to be faithful to the law, that meant Joseph had to have something else also, right? He had to know the law, right? I mean, he couldn't be faithful to it if he didn't know it. So that means that the man that God chose was somebody that knew the law. He knew the traditions. He knew the scripture. He knew what was going on. He knew the procedures. He knew the processes. He knew what it meant. But not only did he know it, faithful to the law means he had to actually practice it, put it in place. You had to see it in his everyday life. You had to look at him and say, yeah, that man, I know that man. That man, he is faithful to the law. Did he struggle with God's plan? Absolutely. And I got to tell you, I can't blame him. I mean, honestly, think about all God asked him to do. Marry a woman who claims to have been impregnated by God himself. Pick up my life and move it to Egypt to keep that child safe. Hey, God, couldn't you pick a little better place than Egypt? There's a lot of sand in Egypt. Couldn't you pick something better? But that's where God told him to go. Bring him back, raise him, look after him, protect him, teach him. All of those things would have fallen to Joseph. And that's an important thing, that he stuck with God's plan through it all. How many times could he have taken a right turn? How many times could he have been the dad that just walked out? How many times could he have been the parent that said, you know what, he's not really my responsibility. God is yours. But he stuck with it. And every time God said, do this, that is exactly what Joseph did. He remained faithful, not only to the law, but to the responsibility he accepted by becoming the earthly father of Jesus. It's a great lesson for us. Leadership does not always mean barking out commands. Sometimes it means you have to learn how to follow some instructions. Sometimes you have to learn how to hear what God is saying. And speaking of hearing, it brings us to our next group of great leaders. I love these guys. They're the shepherds sitting on the hillside. When the angel of the Lord went away from into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, let us go over to Bethlehem and see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has made known to us. And they went with haste and found Mary and Joseph and the baby lying in the manger. And somehow I know that we don't always see shepherds as leaders. I mean, they're just watching after a bunch of sheep. But that's kind of the point. They honed their leadership skills not in a classroom. They never took management 101. They never went out there and said, hey, I got to have a class and better leadership. They honed their skills in a meadow. Jeremiah chapter 3, verse 15 says, and I will give you shepherds after my own heart who will lead you with knowledge and understanding. These hillside shepherds, yeah, they spent a lifetime listening and tending to sheep. Isaiah chapter 40, verse 11. He tends his flock like a shepherd. He gathers the lambs in his arms and carries them close to his heart. He gently leads those that have young. And I have to ask, how did these men know what to do for the sheep? It's real simple. They spoke sheep. Now, I don't mean they looked at the sheep and go, he didn't talk. They didn't talk to the sheep like that, but they knew their sheep. And their sheep absolutely knew them. And that's a leadership skill. Taking the ability to learn who the people are and to understand what their needs are and listening, not always to their voice, because if you just listen to people's voices, they can sometimes be angry or upset or just busy. To get to know a sheep, you got to go and live with the sheep. You got to be around the sheep. You got to know, you know what? That sheep doesn't usually walk like that. There might be something wrong with that sheep. Or that sheep doesn't usually do that. Something's going on. And then understand when you see it, sometimes you have to intervene into a sheep's life. Sometimes when you intervene into a sheep's life, it ain't very pleasant for the sheep. But understand, the job of the shepherd is not to make the sheep happy. The job of the shepherd is to make the sheep healthy. And that means not only does he provide it food and water, he also provides it protection and at times discipline. That's the job of a shepherd. That is the leadership quality that Jesus called himself when he said, I am the great shepherd. Now, when it came to these, now they've heard this message from God, and they did lead their sheep to investigate. They didn't corral all the sheep and take them strolling through Jerusalem, but I'm guaranteeing you left them in an absolutely safe space. They came, they saw, they told, but when they were all done experiencing Jesus, where did they go? Right back to the sheep. Once a shepherd, always a shepherd. Then the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things they had heard and seen, which they had just been told. The shepherds returned. Why? I mean, they just experienced Jesus. Why not just shut down the sheep pasture and go out and just become evangelists? Because that wasn't their job. They were leaders of a flock, and that flock still needed them. And so guess what? They took their message and they told, and then they went back to the sheep. Now, I got a sneaking suspicion that every shepherd that they met, every person they met from there on out, finally got a lesson of, hey, this is the night happened when Jesus arrived on this planet. They never probably stopped telling the story, but they never stopped being shepherds either. And well, they weren't the only ones that got an invitation. The Magi got an invitation. And I love the Magi because the Magi simply did something that sometimes we don't do. They just paid attention. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod, the king, behold, wise men from the east came from Jerusalem saying, where is he who is born the king of the Jews? For we have saw his star when it rose, and we have come to worship him. These journeymen began their quests because of a star. Now, I want you to think about something. How many stars are up there in the sky when you look up? I know we have a lot of light saturation, and there's going to be a cloudy night, so you can't do this tonight, but on the next one of those clear nights when you're kind of away from the city, just look up. How many stars are up there? We're told more than we can count. Now, for dramatic purposes, when we do the Christmas story, we always draw this great, big, obvious spotlight star. Isn't that how it works? We want to make sure everybody sees this is what the wise men were following. But I have to ask a question. If it was really that big, how come everybody didn't see it? Think about that. They're the only ones following the star, at least that we're told of. If it's really that huge and really that great big and really that awesome that it just stands out like a sore thumb, why on earth were they the only ones following the star? Could it be that these men spent so much time stargazing that even if one little small light appeared that had never been there before, they're like, you know what? That's something new. That's something different. Something's changing out there. And I'm paying attention to what's changing around me. And, well, I think we need to go on a little journey. They arrived at Jesus, and well, was he what they were expecting? I don't know what they were expecting to find. They stopped by the palace first, so maybe they were thinking, that's the spot that we need to go. We need to go and we need to see the king, because the king replaced the king. So we don't know what the house was like that they found. Probably wasn't a great big mansion. Probably a simple, maybe even a one-room house. But here's what I know. They arrived him and they still paid attention, because they honored him in worship. And when they were all done worshiping, they didn't cut that pay attention notice off, because they had been given a job by King Herod. Come back and tell me so I can go and worship. But then they paid attention to the dream God gave them, and they headed home ensuring the child's safety. How many times do we miss the mission just because we didn't pay attention? The opportunity is paraded right in front of us. Maybe it's even as big as the star, and we just don't see it, because we're not looking for an opportunity to lead somebody into a relationship with Christ. And well, there's one more character that we really have to address their leadership style. His name is Jesus. Fast forward almost 30 years. I'm in Luke chapter 22, verses 24 through 27. A dispute arose among them being the disciples, as to which one of them was regarded as the greatest. And he said to them, "Kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and those in authority are called benefactors. But not so with you. Rather, let the greatest among you become as the youngest, as the leader as one who serves. For who is the greater, the one who reclines at the table, or the one who serves? Is it not the one who reclines at the table? It is not the one that reclines at the table. I'm among you as the one who serves." Folks, if you want to see godly leadership, he's lying right there in the manger. "Who, being in the very form, very nature of God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage." You see, Jesus focused on a different kind of leadership. He chose to be a servant leader. And to be a servant leader, you have to understand, he had to put in all of those other attributes that we've already seen in leadership. He did have to be available. He did have to be willing to come. He did have to be willing to accept the responsibility. He was going to go through a lot in his life, and he was going to have to remain faithful to the plan. He was definitely going to have to listen. How many times did we see Jesus escape so that he could go and pray, so that him and his Father could commune? And well, yeah, he was going to have to pay attention also. He had to be aware of his surroundings and all the things that were happening. But to be a true servant leader, he had to add one more attribute. He had to be willing to sacrifice. And being found in the appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. And that sacrifice, it's the reason we're here today. We're not here because of the baby in the manger. We're here because of the sacrifice on the cross. It's wonderful to celebrate Christmas, but only because it begins the path to redemption. Because it's through his sacrifice that we're healed. 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 23 through 24. "He himself bore our sins in his body on the cross, so that we might die to sins and live for righteousness. By his wounds you have been healed. For you were like sheep going astray, but now you have returned to the shepherd and the overseer of your soul." That's the baby in the manger. That is true leadership. The only question we have to ask ourselves is, are we willing to follow? After the disciples had that argument, that discussion about who was greater, Jesus wanted to give them an object lesson. we're familiar with these verses, the idea of washing feet. When he had washed their feet, he put on his outer garment and resumed his place, and he said to them, "Do you understand what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right. So I am, for so I am. If then your Lord and teacher have washed your feet, you ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do just as I have done to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is no greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them." So many times at Christmas, we get really busy celebrating Jesus. Wouldn't it be better if maybe we celebrated Jesus by serving Jesus? Isn't the true message of Christmas not just about the baby has been born in a manger? Isn't the true message of Christmas, how can I lead somebody to the manger so that they can experience a relationship with Christ?